Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of One of These Years. Detroit Lions offseason rolls on. I'm, of course, Nick Baumgartner. Back from Phoenix is Colton Pouncey. Colton, was it Phoenix or was it somewhere else in Arizona?
It was Phoenix, yes. Yes, sir.
Phoenix, okay. I didn't want to shortchange whatever palace the owner's meetings was in this year.
It's crazy.
I believe last year it was at the Breakers.
Yep, that's what people kept saying. Yeah.
just like, what the
hell?
Let's
alternate between these different resorts every other year.
You want to get a real glimpse of what the people who run the NFL are? they live in a world that is just like nobody else sees it, right? Man, how was your trip? How was the whole thing?
It was great. It was like, I kind of looked around just like, why am I here? I don't belong here.
Yeah, right. You feel a little out of place. At those, right?
Yeah, because it was held at the Arizona Biltmore. Yes, very underdressed. Yeah. It was at the Arizona Biltmore, which is like a walled off.
Wow. Yeah. Yep.
Spot, and like we're over there. It's me, Alec Lewis, our Vikings writer, Charlotte Carroll, who covers the Giants for us. Us three were kind of hanging out for most of the week, and we decided to head over like Sunday night, and we're just like looking around this place, and I'm just like, this is like a $1,200 a night hotel.
Yeah,
like, right. We're not staying here, but we're at like a Spring Hill Suites.
We're
like,
across the street at the Spring
away.
Hill.
Yeah, this is a little out of our price range, but it was still like we're here at this event, and we're just like, all right, so we're just gonna be posted up here for like the next 3 days, watching all these billionaires like operate and go back and forth and talk to each other and have these side meetings. I'm just like, this is insane. So we get there Sunday night, and they're like setting up for the big Monday party, which I kind of heard about before this event, like talked to some people, like, you know, down at the combine, they're like, oh, right. What you really want to go to is the owner's meeting. It's like, there's so much stuff going on there. That's what you want to be at. Yeah. And I'm like, all right, but the combine is pretty cool. Like, what am I going to get out of that? You know?
Right.
And then we get here, and I'd ask Chris in Slack, like, so what should I be expecting from this like Monday night party? And he was like, imagine if Roger Goodell were the Great Gatsby.
That's
it. I'm like, I started laughing so hard when I read that, and I was telling everyone that was a comp for that, like that had not done this before. And then we all get there, and we're just like, yeah, that checks out.
Yeah. That like sounds about right.
Like open bar for 4 hours is like all you can eat, like steak and like a seafood bar. And I don't even know, like a live
ridiculous.
Music band. Like, yeah, it's just insane. You're looking around, you see all these billionaires, and you're just like, I don't belong here, but this is part of the job, I guess. And you know, we did get like some valuable stuff out of it, talking to
absolutely
Holmes and Campbell and Rod Wood. So it was honestly, I think it's more valuable in terms of like what we do than the combine, just like, you know, catching up with the head coach and then the GM, and then also just talking to other people while you're at that event. It's like a lot more condensed, which, you know, combine's a circus, but this is
dead
like
on
hyper focused. And I think it was, you know, for someone who hasn't done before, I found it really beneficial, even if it was just jarring being at this like resort that I very much cannot afford.
I think that's changed in the last maybe 10 years. Other people who've been around the league closer every year would know it better. Like Chris would have a better perception than me. But like 10 years ago, when I first started going to the combine, they had the owners meetings. But like a lot of that sort of stuff was done at the combine. You know what I mean? A lot of those like meetings and decisions, the rich people would be at the combine. Like a lot of that was done there. And you were talking about that before we started recording, and I think you're dead on. Like, that has now become, because we saw, this is now the second or third year, at least, where multiple coaching staffs have just skipped the combine. Head coach is not going. You know, a lot of coaches that went were only there for a brief period of time. They came in and out. It's just not, you're not getting the value out of it anymore, as the NFL's turned that into a TV production. And so a lot of the nerve center stuff is truly done at the owners meetings. And so I'm really glad the Athletic invests in that, because that is, you know, it's one of those events that, you know, we have everybody there, I think, right? Like we had all the beat writers were there.
Pretty much.
Like that.
Some that we have two beat writers on, they didn't send both, but for the most part, everyone was there. Yeah.
For the most part, everybody was there that really covers the team, which that more than anything else, I think, and I would argue coupled with our draft coverage, but that more than anything else, that we are present at things like that as an entire staff is why our coverage, I think, is just way better than anything else you're going to get anywhere else. Because that really, where you were at this last week is where all the juice, I think, these days sort of comes from. You know what I mean? Like, and you got a lot this week. We got a lot of decent stuff to talk about here. I guess I want to start. What was your sort of biggest takeaway or maybe most interesting thing you heard, be it maybe from Holmes or from Campbell or even from Rod? I know Rod Wood talked about a bunch of stuff too that was interesting, I'm sure, as well.
Yeah, I mean, the general sense I got was that they're ready to go. Like,
yeah,
it seems like they believe the rebuild's like finally coming to an end, and you can see that with some of the moves they made, some of the you know, talking to Holmes for a little bit, mm-hmm. even off to the side, he mentioned sort of the defense and kind of the secondary pieces that they added and what that will do for Aaron Glenn and things he likes to do stylistically. You know, just playing man coverage, you know, being able to blitz with some of these dudes.
Yeah, like, man.
Just the different packages. They can be really multiple on this defense, and the versatility of that secondary too. Like Cam Sutton, you can move him inside. You can put him on the outside. Mm-hmm. Gardner Johnson, you can put him at nickel. You can put him at safety. If guys need more time to come back from injury, like Tracy, or even Emmanuel Mosley, like some of these guys, they don't need to be rushed onto the field. So I think the secondary might be the key of the defense. And I didn't realize that going in. I thought they needed, we're all talking about the three tech. They need some defensive linemen. It feels like the secondary was kind of what they were looking to address, and they absolutely did that. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, they feel like they're ready to go. They have the horses now to run the defense that Aaron Glenn wants to run, which they didn't have before. And so, you know, Campbell and Glenn have already been talking about kind of the ways they can use some of these pieces. And Campbell straight up said, it's time to go get this NFC North. Like, we have the pieces now, like we're loaded up and, you know, time to make a run at this thing. So I think there's sort of this overarching theme that this team is ready to contend. Mm-hmm. And I asked Rod Wood when he spoke, I was like, so what's an event like this for you? Like, what's the buzz you're getting after a season that you guys just had?
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
He's like, you know, we're getting a lot of people. A lot of it is coaches respecting what Campbell did. Like Campbell has the respect of his peers. Like, and that's something that we assumed. But when you're at an event like this and you're seeing all of them, all 32 here, like,
yeah,
pretty much all of them are coming up to me being like, man, Campbell did a hell of a job last year with that roster and that young team. So,
yeah.
I think now, but even then, he was just like, but we still haven't accomplished anything. You know, like we missed the playoffs, went 9-8. So there's sort of this like focus on what the 2023 season can be. It's sort of the opening of this window for them. And you can tell that with some of the moves that they've made, being aggressive in free agency, even the fact that they pursued Calais Campbell. Like he signed with the Falcons.
Exactly. But,
a guy like that, if they were to add him, that shows you like, no, like we're making a run this year. Mm-hmm. And even though they miss, it still tells you we're trying to make a run this year. So, I don't know. Maybe there's part of us that were like, well, they're not quite there yet. Like they still should be building this thing up. And I think that's still part of the plan, but, man, they really look at this 2023 season as one that they can, get into the dance, maybe make a run. And this is just the beginning for them. So,
yeah,
it was pretty interesting to kind of hear the comments from those guys.
It's really cool to see because this was sort of like the aggressive timeline when they started to be at the end of year three. And it was almost, and it was necessary too. It was like, it's aggressive, but you have to do it. By the end of your third year, this team needs to either be in the playoffs or like, right, or where they were at the end of last year, frankly, like right there at the edge. So they're ahead of schedule. And like we said, and like to be in this position, I think they sense it. And I think that the moves they've made this offseason as much as anything, and now that, you know, you hear them say it and vocalize it and not really be bashful or shy away from it, I think that's important. And I think you're right, because you look at the problems they had last year, because I think that they thought they were closer last year. And I think they were proven correct in the end. They just had some issues at the beginning that they didn't foresee, and that was on them as well. But if you look at what they've done this year, they went back and they addressed all of the areas that really screwed them last year. And that's, we did not have any veterans in the secondary. We didn't have anybody we could rely on in terms of the chips are down. We need to go get it. It's too early. It was too early for Kirby Joseph in week three, right? All these things. And now they have all that. And now they can go into the draft and address their front and be done with it, right? Like we're going to talk about our mock here scenarios in the second half. But that's kind of my biggest takeaway of everything they've done this offseason is put them in position to use this draft as the finishing touches and be like, here we go. We're going to go win it right now. Like, we're not messing around. And yeah, I agree with you. I think that's the mood from everybody in the building.
Yeah, and when you look at the roster, there are still some questions for, like, beyond this 2023 season. With the secondary, it's like they signed these guys. Some of them are on one-year deals, so how do you bring them back? Some of the guys up front, like Romeo and Charles Harris, might not be around, but I think that's also how you can address the draft. That was another thing Holmes talked about. Like, we have the flexibility to kind of do what we want with this draft and really make a monster out of a few positions. So whether that's you know, getting a young corner to even learn from some of these guys, like before they leave, maybe, or even if they stick around, just keep adding to a position like that. The defensive line, that feels like a loaded position right now. But if some of those guys do depart, this is sort of the Eagles plan that we've been talking about. Like, you plan ahead for the future, a year out, basically. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, there should not be a drop off if Romeo leaves and you draft Tyree Wilson, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. Even the offensive line, like, we've talked about that, like Vitae and even Glasgow. You know, he's only here for a year on the one-year deal, so maybe you get some depth now and you kind of figure out the rest later. So they really can do whatever they want in this draft.
Yeah.
If they do target that defensive line and try to make it nasty, which they have a chance to do, which we'll explain later in the mock draft, like you don't even need like a, you know, a stud linebacker. You don't need Roquan Smith in the middle.
No.
That secondary and you got that defensive line.
No.
And talked to Aaron Glenn, like, last week, he kept saying the positions we're looking at are the secondary, cornerback, defensive line. Like, that's those are always going to be, like, the strength of our defense. Like, I don't think they view the linebacker position as something that's, you know, you need that all-pro talent there. So, yeah, they have a chance to kind of, the offense is already good. You know, we know about that.
Right. It's ready to go.
Another thing I learned from these meetings, Ben Johnson is, like, people are so high on him.
Yeah. Yeah,
they kind of view him as this like brilliant offensive mind, and it's only a matter of time before he kind of gets his own
deal. Yeah,
yeah, and that, like, a lot of people respected him for kind of coming back this year and kind of seeing it through. But man, people are high on him around the league. So you got the offense in place, you have a chance to really turn the defense around. Like, they got a chance, man.
I know
they got a chance.
And it's weird to hear all of the people be like, what they're doing is impressive, because normally you hear nothing because they don't want to be mean.
Right.
Because they don't want to be mean to them and be like, oh my God, this is a disaster. Right? Like, or they give these fake, like, oh yeah, they're doing a great job. It's a real tough spot. But no, yeah, I mean, like,
along. It's a tough place to win. You know?
Yeah. I mean, you can see it in the signings that they've had. Every one of them, like, most of these guys have had options. Marvin Jones just came back. I mean, I know Marvin Jones. I'm sure he had options to go somewhere else. And obviously, I think the family probably liked being here. And everything else, but like, he's not coming here unless he's definitely a guy that's not coming here unless he doesn't vibe with the coach. And I'm curious about that. Did Campbell get asked about the free agent recruiting or Holmes at all about, like, was it easier? Did you notice it being easier? Because, like, it feels like their rep inside of locker rooms is way better everywhere else. You know what I mean? Because 5 years ago, you would have had to, like, drag someone kicking and screaming to come to Detroit, regardless of Patricia. Didn't matter.
Yeah.
Now it doesn't really feel like that as much.
Holmes and Campbell specifically didn't talk about that, but, you know, talking to Rod a little bit, he says, you know, just about perception, you know, he sensed it. He thinks that that's kind of been the reason why they were able to land some of these players that they probably wouldn't have been able to land, like, even a year ago.
Right.
So what Holmes was really talking about more with these players is that he feels he got a lot of these guys sort of, not at a discount, but, you know, when you look at some
fair
of the situations.
Anyway.
Yeah, that, but also just, like, the way they're able to acquire these guys. Like, Emmanuel Mosley, if that dude doesn't tear his ACL, and he finishes the year as he started it, which is, like, a top 30 corner per PFF, and all these great numbers playing on that defense, like, he's getting a multi-year deal. Probably, you know, $8 to $10 million range, maybe more. So, they were able to get him for, what was it, 1 year,
six million?
Yeah, something like that.
This is,
like,
what Holmes does every single year. Every year, this is Holmes his thing. Like, this is his thing.
So he was talking about, like, he said Mosley was another one that he just fit our style. And he's another kid that's got that versatility. He can play outside. He can play inside. Mm-hmm. And look, if Mosley didn't get hurt last year, I don't even know if we would have been able to really be in the range to even acquire him.
Right.
We could have that's how hot him. Of a start he was off to. So that was Holmes on Mosley. With CJ Gardner-Johnson, they were like, we were monitoring the whole time, but we didn't really think that was going to be realistic, basically, is what he was
kind of telling us. And then he kind of messed his thing up, and CJ did. Yeah. You
know, there were so many conflicting reports. So I feel like it's a lot of, you know,
somebody messed something up.
Yeah. But he did say we were fortunate enough that the market came to a place.
They got him a deal.
That we were able to make it happen. So that was, and they love him. Like they said, he's sort of the example of an Aaron Glenn guy. So hearing Holmes say that shows you that those two were kind of talking the whole time. Holmes did say when that deal was finalized, probably around like 10 p.m. That Sunday night, he said he started like yelling in his house and woke up his like wife and kids when he got the deal done. So that shows you how pumped they are to get him. David Montgomery, you know, he's another guy that probably wasn't on our radar because we assumed they were bringing Jamal back. And so Holmes kind of told his story, and he was taking the high road, didn't have any shots for him, said that. He told a story about when Jamal was signed in 2021, he kind of walked into a meeting room and like, you know, slapped a wall that had a Lions logo and said, this, you know, this is not going to be the same as it once was. Like we're going to do something with this. And that they knew that was the kind of player they were getting when they signed him 2 years ago. He's one of those tone setters for a young roster, a young 100%. Team. And that's what they wanted back then. But at the same time, I think what you said recently, like they've kind of graduated beyond that. That was sort of the sense I got talking to Holmes, and they said, look, we tried to bring him back, doesn't always work out, but at the same time, like, we're very, very happy to get Montgomery at a similar price point as what we were looking to bring Jamal back. So it seems like I don't know, you know, again, this is free agency, everyone's kind of upset, like feelings getting them in the way a little bit. I do think they like, you know, I do think that they wanted Jamal back. It just didn't work out.
I know they did
financially. And I don't think that they're I don't think they're sweating,
unhappy with the result.
I think they're very happy to have David Montgomery, who's probably in their mind an upgrade. So that's kind of where they left things, took the high road, but they're pumped to get Montgomery because he's a guy they've been watching for years with the Bears. And since Iowa State, he brought that up, like Holmes talking about his days in college, breaking tackles and all that stuff. So I think they view him as this kind of all around back that can be a 1A, can be a 1B, and can kind of take your run game to the next level. So I think very happy to get him. That was another kind of takeaway from that session.
That's such a good like discussion point there, the whole thing, because that really is his like signature with free agency, because he goes back to his draft knowledge. He goes back to, and he watches everything. I think that's, but you know, that's part of it too. But like when you really study a player and you watch every single thing and you turn over every single stone, like he talks a lot. He talked very early about stacking players. That's all he does. You know, he's like, that's all we do in there is just stack guys all day. We just watch tape and just restack and resort and restack and resort every available player in the league. Every single person. Like that's what. So when the time comes to make decisions and be in spots where you can like work a board or like work a situation to your advantage, guys like Brad Holmes are always going to be with the better hand. They're always going to have the like the edge or the leverage in any negotiation because they're always going to have the option. Like, I don't want to just like totally speak out of turn, but like what happened with Jamal is more or less, my understanding is Jamal showed his hand and the Lions countered and they didn't think the Lions would have a counter. And they didn't think the Lions would have a backup plan and they did. And they moved on with it. And like, that is what happened. And so it's a it's been a shrewd, savvy offseason filled with, you know, guys like you, like Mosley is a perfect example. This is how they got Charles Harrison here. Same exact thing. So many guys like this that were just like a little flaw here. Something random happened there that just didn't quite fit or whatever. And he became available and poof. Also, none of these guys got deals that were nuts. None of these guys got deals that were like 3 years. None of these guys got overpaid. It was like, here's what you're getting. This is last resort time. And it's just been, I think that's just, that's how you do it. That's how you do it. Your stack is constantly evolving. You don't make decisions 5 years ago and then just stick with them throughout a player's life and never change your mind. I think that's sort of what we see from Brad Holmes is his list is always changing. The stack's always moving. And that's how a modern GM, I think, has to do it.
Yeah. I mean, you don't ever want to get caught without a backup plan. No. And you should always be surveying other options. And whether it's you think it's realistic or not, like, he even said with Gardner Johnson, like, I was staying in contact with his agent the entire time. Like,
Yeah.
Driving home from work.
Just let me know.
Driving home from the office, I give him a call, like every single day, basically, to monitor his situation. Let me know if we have a chance at this guy, and we'll try to make it work. And that's what happened. And they finally did that, and it materialized with Montgomery. It's like, I'm sure they were having conversations with him, just saying, hey, if things don't work with Jamal, we're going to turn to you. We're going to open up the resources maybe a little bit more.
If like, then, right.
Yeah. If it gets to that point. So
if then. It's always if then. Like if that's then. The world of NFL football. If then. Mm-hmm. Now what? Right? That's how it works on the field, in a game. Like that's how they teach. If this guy moves here, you do this. If that, you do that. Like that's how it works. And like for the first time, and that's why people I think at the end of the day are so excited about where the Lions are at. Because for the first time in, I mean, I don't want to shortchange people. Like Martin Mayhew had some nice days at the office. I won't discount that. There have been people through here that have had some good moves and made good decisions. And I don't ever want to, because I think that gets, not everybody was Matt Millen, all right? Like that's what I would say in the last 20 years.
Yeah.
But for the first time in a long, long time, maybe my lifetime, that since maybe I was a kid that I can't remember, you have a staff led by a person who just uncovers every stone. I think we have 3 years of evidence now, basically, or three cycles of evidence that the research that this guy does on players, it's not just the eye for talent, which I think he has, but it's the like exhaustive amount of research with the foresight like that's leading the charge. I mean, it was a home run hire. That's what this feels like to me, Colton, because I don't want to jump lines on this and say anything, whatever, but this was a hard rebuild. And we are talking about a team that we think should maybe win the division. Like, it's been a really good stretch for Brad Holmes, has it not? I don't want to heap too much more praise on the guy, but like, wow, it's been really good.
No, but it's like you're looking for things that like you can criticize sometimes. Like, yeah, because everything's so positive. And sometimes I'm just like, there's got to be something, right? And I'm like, okay, maybe they overpaid for Anzalone, but then you hear them talk about him and they're just like, he's awesome. Like,
they
we love
care.
Him. And it's like, they really don't. So you can argue maybe, they, you know, Montgomery, what value are you getting of a free agent running back? Well, I don't know. I've made
but
my thoughts
on
him clear.
Deal.
I think it's enough.
Yeah.
Like, if you can bring him back at a summer, if you can get him at a summer, you know, price point 100%. That you were talking to Jamal for, he's an upgrade.
Deal.
So you're going to have, it's not like you're just like, oh, well, we were just going to go into the draft with only Swift on the roster. That was never realistic, guys. Like, people are like, why even sign a running back if you can just draft one? They weren't going to go into the draft with not just having DeAndre Swift. Like, come on. Like,
he wasn't good enough.
He wasn't. He's an injured running back.
Right.
Who doesn't have a back. Like, Craig Reynolds can't be your RB2. So, I don't know. They were going to have some free agent running back in the mix, whether it was Jamal or someone else. And they got David Montgomery. So, I like that move a lot for them. So, I'm going through the list and trying to think, like, what about these moves do I not like? They signed two corners that were on my, like, free agent watch list for them. So, I'm like, of course I like those moves. So, again, it's just sort of Brad Holmes is kind of running this thing how, you know, a lot of us probably would. And smarter than us, too. I don't want to say, like, you know, he's, you know, reading The Athletic for us. But there just aren't too many things that I can disagree with based on what he's done. And I think that's kind of shows you the health of the franchise right now with him and Campbell kind of running things. So.
Yep. What Chris and I used to say is they just always like it's always logical. It just always makes sense. It's not it's what we would do, but it's also like what a lot of people would do. You know, like it's like what the thing that makes sense. It's like just the logical thing that if you're and like usually it's what you're trusting this person's eye. But oftentimes nowadays. We have data, we have evidence, we have like we know more about the game. And it backs up and it just jives with what makes sense. It's like jives with what we see. It jives, you know, what smart people see on TV. When we watch a guy like CJ Gardner-Johnson, everything he does, and we hear everything the Lions say they want to be about, you're like, well, that's a perfect fit. That would be perfect. And then they go out and sign him. And it's just like, those are the things that have happened here. Like, and you're like, well, they lost Chark in free agency, which we knew was probably like at least very possible. DJ got paid.
Yeah, I would say likely.
And so you need a guy that can fill his spot. Well, I mean, Marvin Jones would be cool. Oh, okay, well, they go sign Marvin Jones. And it's just like, Jesus, like how many more things? Penei Sewell would have been a good draft pick if he falls to you. Okay, well, here you go. They're drafting him. And it's like Aiden Hutchinson. There you go.
Bringing back Glasgow.
Right. Yes. Like it's just been a lot of stuff that when you're like, man, that would be a good fit if that works. And it always seems to work. Like that's kind of the thing that has happened here in a weird way. And yes, you're right, Colton. Like you're waiting for the when are they going to make a draft pick that makes no sense or something, you know, where you're like, when are they going to do something? They're like, I don't get this at all. That has never happened. Aubrey Pleasant was the only thing that has happened here that I did not understand in the moment. And I understand it more now, of course, but, and it, not, I get it more than, and it made sense. It makes sense to me more now, but like, that's really the only thing. That's it. Everything else has really been like, yeah, I get it. I mean, there really hasn't been much. Maybe that speaks to the fact that teardowns are just maybe easier to manage. I don't know, but I guess we'll see. I don't know. All right, let's take a break here, and then we'll come back to the other side, and we'll break down our mock scenarios that we ran today. All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of One of These Years. It's mock draft season in full now, Colton, as we are now, I think, almost like exactly 1 month away, or 4 weeks away from the draft. NFL draft here at the end of April, stretch drive this morning on The Athletic. Colton and I ran a one of my favorite mock exercises that we try to do every year, which is the scenarios. We did 4 3-round hypotheticals. We used PFF's mock draft simulator, which is awesome, by the way. If anyone has a PFF subscription, it's behind the paywall right now, Colton. You can't get it for free, I don't think.
I believe that's correct, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, big ups to the PFF people. That thing is really cool. They did a great job with it. The trades.
They also fixed it to where it's not so much skewed towards their own board.
Right, like you can change it.
They have sliders now that you can kind of
it's really cool.
A more public board versus PFF. Yeah. You can do needs versus just drafting best player available. So I think they cleaned it up, so it's even better than it was like
a month. It's really cool, and I'm going to make Chris take it and force the higher-ups here to look at it and be like, okay, we need to do the same thing, because that's what because I think that's what we need to do here. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. We did the 4 scenarios, which sort of the idea to start this was like just to sort of illustrate all of the options that the Lions have, right? You know, the one that we sort of didn't do, I guess, would have been just sitting there and not doing anything, which was sit at 6, sit at 18, and never move. But I think that we both kind of agree that, and that's where I would start with this with you. We don't think that Holmes is going to keep all of his draft picks here, especially if there's a player that he likes within target range. We think that he'll probably lend to be more aggressive. You agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So that being said, we did the trade scenarios of trade back up, sit at 6 and 18, trade back up. We did the trade down from 6. We did, and then we finished it actually with 2 trade up from 6, which I think doesn't get talked about really as much as it probably should. But I want to start with the first one, Colton. Your thoughts on our first one, which was the trade back into the first round. I actually had a lot of people, I think, tell me they liked that one the best, which allowed us to sit at 6 and draft Tyree Wilson, stay at 18 and draft Kalijah Kancey. So you're done on defense right there, right? Mm-hmm. And then trade back up for Bijan Robinson at 25. Is that what we did?
Yep. Jump the Cowboys at 26. So yeah, 25.
So walk us through the rationale on that one and then what you thought of the first one there. That one actually is pretty good.
Yeah. No, I'm looking at it now. I'm like, wow, we did a good job for them. yeah, Tyree, I think, you know, staying at 6 in this scenario of you know, it's 3 quarterbacks, Will Anderson, Jalen Carter in the top 5. Then you're sitting there at 6. We discussed, who did we discuss? Chris Gonzalez and
Peter
Skoronski at that position. And I think that might be the 3 that they end up looking at there if it plays out like this. But we end up going Tyree Wilson just because we want to make that defensive line as nasty as possible.
Yeah,
when you're building through the trenches, you can never go wrong early. Like, that's a safe pick. So I love the idea of getting Wilson. I love the idea of coming back getting Kancey at 18. By the way, I don't know if you saw Kancey's like pro day results.
Did he kill it again?
Yeah.
God.
This dude's unreal. Like, his movement and
I've wondered if he's gonna be there at 18, honestly. I don't know. I don't know.
Like, I saw people saying take him at like 10 for the Eagles.
He might go. Yeah, that's that could be a spot where Philly like jumps the line and just says, screw it, we're taking him here. Yep.
Yeah. But anyway, those 2 together, you put Wilson, Kancey, Ali McNeil, Aiden Hutchinson, Pascal, you got Houston, you still got Romeo and Charles, and Kaminsky, like that defensive line is disgusting for 2023. Some of those guys move on. That's fine because you still have the depth, and all of those dudes are young.
That's all right. Of them they're are all young. Under 25,
and they're all under contract for multiple years. And that's like, man, like you're gonna look back on that defensive line room years from now, and being like, all right, that was a nasty group.
Yeah.
So those two at 6 and 18, and then trading up back into the first for Bijan Robinson, which was sort of an exercise I explored in the last beat writer mock with mm-hmm. all of our athletic writers picking for their own teams. I traded back into the first for Darnell Washington, who I actually think will end up going closer to the first round than the second round, but that's just me. But in this scenario, we did it for Bijan with the reasoning that, you know, Swift is a free agent. This is his last year with the Lions, you know, unless they come to an agreement for an extension there. But if they don't, you can pair Bijan with Swift and Montgomery for at least 1 year, which mm-hmm. is going to be the best running back room in football.
Yeah, you'd have the best rush offense in the game.
And then when if Swift does leave, then you still have Bijan and David Montgomery, who they do a lot.
Still
of
have
things,
the best rush cool. offense in the football.
I think you can find a seventh round change of pace
whatever
if you really want some more speed or whatever, like the smaller guy. So I still like that the idea of Bijan. I know you wrote about that recently.
Oh yeah,
I agree with you. It'd still be. You can find a way to get him and trade back up for it. Like, I think that's sort of a no-brainer when a talent like that's sitting at 25. So we ended up trading 48, 81 in the third, and then a 2024 third for 25. So I think the value lines up pretty well there, just about even.
That was almost even,
And that the 2024 third we would be trading would be the Vikings third, not the Lions' own third.
Well, they have two, right? Back, yeah, so, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They have two, so it's like we still have that third for next year.
Right.
And the Vikings pick, you know, if they take a step back this year, let's say they finish where the Lions finished this past year, that's like 18th pick in the third round or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's almost equal value at that point. So I like that move a lot for Bijan to trade up for him. And then at 55, we had some different options, but we sort of wanted to put this on the table. Like the Lions have talked to Hendon Hooker a lot this offseason.
Yeah.
Like, at the Senior Bowl, I believe at the Combine. Like, so they've been in communication with him. If they don't want to explore a quarterback at six or earlier, Hooker feels like a good option for them. If they still want to get a young guy in here that can develop under Goff and maybe start one day. So, I don't love Hooker. I don't love the ACL. I don't love the age. I don't love the offense that he played in, which is, you know, I covered Josh Heupel at Mizzou when he was the OC and he turned Drew Lock into a second round pick. And
he did. He definitely did.
Drew Lock is not a second round pick talent, but, you know, if Hooker's there, I think it makes sense. But honestly, like, he might not even be there at this point just because people tend to overdraft quarterbacks on this time of year. Like, we're talking about seeking him into the late first.
Yeah, that I would not do
Mike,
that.
Mike Tannenbaum at ESPN did his mock and had him fifth overall to the Seahawks.
Okay.
So, God, we're getting there already. What? I don't think he'll be there at 55.
Well, I think he'll be there at six if you want to, like, what are we
if you want, yeah, if you want a 25-year-old quarterback coming off an ACL, you got to take him at six, right?
So, I like that pick because it depends on what you need him for. Depends on what you need him for. Yeah. If you need him to be your franchise quarterback, no, don't do it. Like, that's not what no one should be taking him in the first round. I don't think I would do that. But, like, Drew Lock is a great. What is Drew Lock now? Drew Lock was incorrectly labeled as a future starting quarterback. He's probably not that. But I think Drew Lock could probably become a very valuable seasoned backup who, you know, if a guy gets hurt and he needs to start a season for you or start 10 games, he could do it. And your team's not going to fall apart. Like, I kind of feel like that is a market that is being created almost as a result of all the failures from some of these, like, disastrous picks and decisions. And it's like, well, like, I live by the Shanahan code of there's not that many starters that are actually of value. So don't lie to yourself and say that you have one when you don't. Understand what these guys are. Put them in their proper buckets. If you're drafting Hendon Hooker in the second round to be a very quality backup who's capable of starting multiple games for you in a pinch if need be, then that's a great pick, I think. And I think in that case, the age works for him because he's ready to go. He's going to be more mature. He's going to be ready to work. He's going to come in there and do his thing. And that's why the criticisms about, and I understand that too, the, you know, the offense he plays in, which is designed to get people open, right? It's designed to create those big windows that sometimes he misses in. To me, that's not as relevant for a guy if you're looking at him just for the secondary role. And I think that the secondary quarterback role in today's NFL is like way more important than it is given value to by most teams. Look what the Lions have done these last couple of years. You're just walking through fire, hoping that your season doesn't go to hell if Goff rolls one ankle or something, right? Like, can't happen, especially now, the way that they play. So
we just all have the 49ers too. So
yeah, right. I just think that's a solid, if you have a good football team around that guy. Okay. Brock Purdy. Yeah, right. Brock Purdy won a damn playoff game. Right? Yeah. Jesus. So
I will say, I think with the hooker conversation, I agree. If that's what you're getting him for, it makes sense. I would probably try to get him in the third, but at this point, I just don't think he's going to be there.
Yeah.
A second still feels high. Even all things considered, still feels high.
It does.
At the same time, I feel like that's not the conversation that's actually happening. I feel like teams are convincing themselves
that he's a starter.
A starter. And like they're convincing himself he has like
same maybe thing with top Ritter 12 last year.
Quarterback upside. Yeah. Right. And like, which happens every year. There's always a couple guys they talk themselves into or whatever, but I just don't I don't know if I see it. I saw
Arthur Smith.
That's just
Arthur Smith getting all hot about all those Desmond Ritter questions. And it was like, we'll see.
Stop playing to go get Lamar.
Desmond Ritter the best of any of the quarterbacks in last year's class. And I think that most people ended up agreeing with that. But it's that is the example where you're like, you're just telling yourself that he's going to be a starter. You don't know that. Like, he's just a guy, basically, right? Like, so.
I almost wonder how many of these teams that, like, could absolutely, like, use a guy like Lamar are just convincing themselves, like, or they're trying to convince us, I guess, that they don't want him when in reality. Yeah. They're trying to get like Caleb Williams or Drake May like next year.
They're just trying to get the younger version of Lamar on a rookie contract. That's what they're trying to do. But the other thing I wanted before we move on, the edge piece here and the doubling up, you mentioned it, doubling up with Wilson and Kancey. Like, again, that to me, and we talked about this in the first half, that is a strategy that I think we could see play out. If they double up anywhere, that's where it could be, I think, in the first round. It could definitely be that, where the two defensive linemen. Because if you double up and say, we're hammering down on the edge, we've got Aiden Hutchinson, who is a three-down edge defender, one of the best young edges in the league, with another number six pick, who's also an edge, with Kancey or someone like that inside, you know, Breece or Miles Murphy if he falls, and you just load it up, and you just say, we got all these versatile, giant, twitchy dudes who are going to seal gaps, our linebackers are whatever, and now we have all these veterans behind them. Every single decision that you make defensively from here on out can be about just now, just winning right now. That's how you go pay Calais Campbell. That's how you go do the things, you know, that didn't work out. But next year, whatever, you can start adding those like pieces that we get asked about every single year. Hey, do you think the Lions will go in for Jamel Dean or guys like that? Next year, yes. Like, that's what I would say. If you do this, then I think you can start having those conversations, right? Like, that's what I think hammering the edge, hammering the lines. Like I told you yesterday, like, you never go broke taking a profit is the old man's saying of the of lifetime. That's it. Build your lines. If you're always good in the lines, you're never going to be a bad football team. Ever. Ever. I don't care what happens. Like, if that's what you're rooted in, you're always going to be quality. So I think that I could definitely see them, because I saw Holmes said that to you guys about we're not doubling up on corners, probably, guys. Like,
which is so funny. That was a question I asked him. I was just like, do you feel like, you know, what you've done for agency gives you more flexibility, more options in the draft? Like, what's kind of your take on that?
Right.
He's like, he looked at me, he's like, well, you know, I have seen some mocks, you know, I'm not gonna lie, I look at some of those, but I've seen some mocks where maybe a month ago we had like two corners or two DBs in the first round. And I was just like, we did that. we did that. But now it's like basically what they did in free agency is they doubled up, like they tripled up. They got CJ Gardner-Johnson, they got these two corners. So basically you could have done it in the draft with young players that were unproven, but now you got these veterans that have been there and done that. And when they're all healthy and playing together, like you have that depth there, like starting quality players in your secondary. And now you can double up at the defensive line. And now you've got stacked positions in the secondary at corner, on the edge, in the interior, like you could do whatever you want. Like the linebacker position almost doesn't even matter in this defense at that point. So
just warm bodies. Basically.
Yeah. And you can they can still add like a guy in the second, maybe Jack Campbell's there. Like that would complete your defense. Then you're
exactly.
Like, okay, now we're talking about like a top 10 unit.
Right. And then next year, now, if like, yes. And then that's the thing. Yeah. Like next year, if like people ask about Bobby Wagner and guys like this every year, right? Like the the guy that comes out that you could get for $15 million or $13 million or something stupid like that for one year.
Yeah.
Next year you could do that.
You do it. Yeah. Absolutely.
I don't know who that guy would be. You know, like I don't know who Jalen Ramsey or one of these dudes. But that's the type of the guy that turns you from we want to get into the playoffs to we're going to try to win the Super Bowl. Like that's what I'm talking about. Like and you but you can't do that until you're sound in your fronts completely without question. That's what the Eagles do.
Yeah.
Right? When they when you really peel it all back, they do this really at every position so well, but they the lines are where they started. They have contingency plans for every single guy, and every single guy is awesome, and every single guy's backup is going to be awesome. Like that's what they do. Like it's just what they do. And I think the Lions are in position to maybe attack that. Here. Next scenario, what was number two that we did? Now I'm all backed up here.
That was the trade back from
seven. That was the trade back.
Yeah.
So this one, I feel like this might be hard, man. Like this was the this is the Levis conversation that, you know, will they be able to find anybody that wants to jump the Raiders to take Will Levis? And do the Raiders even want to take Will Levis? Does anybody in the top 10 want to take Will Levis? And the combine was like, the vibe there was that he was dipping and Richardson was climbing. And I have not heard anything to suggest Levis's dip hasn't stopped. But
anything,
I don't know.
After
I don't
after
know.
After the last few days, I think it's even more likely he falls. But that's,
I just
don't know if teams are going to be calling the Lions to trade up to six to draft that dude. That's kind of where I'm at now.
But again, like, there's, I look at that. There's no motivation to dog him to be like, oh, I think he sucks, so he'll fall to me. If I, but so yeah, go ahead. I don't know, man. Like, I think that's going to be hard to do to trade down.
Yeah, I don't think teams in the top 10 are that fascinated with him or intrigued. And maybe I don't honestly like if I'm like a team like the Titans. I saw there's one mock that had the Lions trading down to 11 with the Titans, which like I've explored that on PFF. But at the same time, if I'm the Titans and they have a new GM. If I'm the Titans,
who seems to be kind of like Holmes,
I think
conservative.
Yeah, and I think they're trying to like reload that roster without fully tearing it down. But also,
yeah, they want to build the lines up.
There were some rumors that like they might be looking to trade Derrick Henry, and like I don't know exactly
and just get some assets
this roster. But like they might have to take a step back so they can go forward. That's kind of how I view that team.
Yeah,
and if you're somewhat bad next year, why would you trade a pick like that? Like you'd have to, if you want to move up to six from 11, you'd
probably they need more picks.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So some people had trading like their 2024 first to move up to six. And I'm like, if I were them, I would not do that. If you have a chance to get like a Drake May or Caleb Williams, like don't.
No,
like,
just don't do that. You're not, yeah, you're not going to be good at all anyway. Don't,
you'll get a good player at 11.
Lie to yourself. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't see that. You know, I guess what might be more realistic, and I don't know, maybe there is a team that just loves Levis and like we're like we can't sit on
there
the
could be
that conversation.
Somebody
anymore.
Might be lying, right?
Yeah,
it's very possible.
There could be a liar out there. So but in this scenario, we did the Texans. So in you know, the Texans are at two. Might take a quarterback, probably gonna take a quarterback, although I wouldn't be surprised if they took Will Anderson.
Yeah, not impossible.
But if they took let's say they take Bryce at two, they're sitting at 12. And they see like the big three defensive linemen in this draft. So one of them is there at six.
Carter is what we
Carter or even like Wilson maybe if they like him.
Yeah, but, if like, they like Tyree, right?
D'Amico Ryans, you know, is their new head coach. He's a defensive guy. Mm-hmm. He came for the 49ers. He's former player. Like he might want a franchise piece to build around on defense.
Exactly. That was my thought too. Like maybe he thinks, hey, I can take Jalen Carter and make it work. You know?
Yeah. And so with this scenario, and they have all these assets, they have, you know, the Browns 2024 first round pick, they have, you know, that Deshaun deal, they basically have picks on picks on picks.
Oh, yeah, it's ridiculous. They have they have too many picks is what they
way
have.
Way too many.
Yeah.
So what we did with this trade, honestly, like, they were able to keep, what pick they have in second, like 33 is like their early second
yeah,
round
33
pick.
Was
you
their,
you can keep
yeah.
that, like.
Right.
The numbers didn't
it's
really
another
match
first round
up.
Pick, basically, in this draft. Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So keep your 2024 first, keep 33 in this draft. You give us 12, you give us 65, and you give us 104 in the fourth. and we'll give you six and a sixth, 194.
Yeah, and we gave him the sixth. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that was, I think the value was maybe 5 points off or something like that in terms
yeah,
of
it was
like
close.
The Rich Hill chart. It was really close. I'm just like,
right.
I think that works. I think the Lions would do that if it came to be.
Yeah.
Because you trade down. Who do we
I think they would 12? Even take a loss. Yeah. On yeah. the, you know what I mean? In I the value so. Chart. Yeah. Yeah. I think they just would, even picks. If it was, yeah, just like, even if it was like, just get me another pick, just get me yeah. another second round or third round pick. Like, I think that's all you're looking for if you're trying to do that. And I think that that's why I wouldn't rule it out. But I also think this is like almost one of the least likely scenarios. It feels like I
we
just
really had
don't
to force it.
Yeah.
You're like squinting really hard to try to find
the Levis question is really tough because yeah. I do not see Minnesota and Washington are the two that I have looked at. Minnesota, there's no way they're doing that.
Minnesota
that's
doesn't
too,
want
that's
him.
Way
they're
too
not,
much.
Coming up for him.
Yeah. And like, even if they liked him, that's way too much. Like, basically, which I don't really think they do. But Washington, too, and I don't really know if they like him either. And that's kind of the question where it's like, they probably like him fine, but do they love
they're
him?
They're back in
and
Sam Howell. They keep saying
and they're
that.
They're talking up Sam Howell, which sometimes can be
which
real.
Which tells me they're talking up
bullshit.
Caleb and Drake. That's what
exactly.
that. That's what that
so,
tells me.
Right. Exactly. So, like, I think that that's probably more in line. Bieniemy's there now in Washington. I think he'd probably be more likely to say, hey, whatever, let's just see if I can turn Sam Howell into something usable for 1 year, that's going to speak well for me. Next year, we're going to get Caleb Williams, and I'll be off and running again. And then I'm going to have the same problem that I had in Kansas City, where people are going to be like, oh, you're just another, you know. Like, but in any event, it's going to be hard to trade down from six, I think, unless the board gets weird. You know, and it would also have to get weird for this to happen, right? For Carter to fall is not a given. Like, I still don't know if he's going to get beyond Seattle there at five.
And if he is there at six, maybe the Lions just stand pat and
maybe they just take him. And yeah, we didn't talk about that one in this draft, but like, we've talked about that before on last week's show. We talked about that. Definitely wouldn't rule that out. And I do think they'd have a market there. I wouldn't rule that out either. I think that some people would be like, I'll do it. I think there's got to be a lot of teams that are like, I could take him. I'll fix him. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we'll hire some counselors. We'll make it work.
I mean,
you
know? like Holmes and Campbell were both asked about Jalen Carter, and Holmes was like, well, we haven't done our scouting on interior defensive line yet. It's like, all right, but you've watched him play.
Yeah, okay, bud.
And, Jesus Christ. But I get it. You know, he's not going to answer that question directly. Like, I didn't expect a full answer. And then, but Campbell was just like, you know, we talked to one of his teammates at Georgia. We found some interesting stuff. Literally said that. He answered the question directly. And then the follow-up was it positive or negative? He's like, it was interesting.
It was interesting. Yeah.
So that's all he said, which I don't know. I kind of took that as like, they liked what they heard, but that was just me reading it.
Well, they're not going to eliminate themselves from the conversation. That's definitely, they're not going to eliminate themselves from the conversation. That's definitely the smart play.
Because, but Campbell did, he did also say, if your locker room is strong enough, you can take on like one or two of those guys. Like, so,
absolutely.
And Glenn said the same thing to me like a week ago. So that's why, and I kind of wrote about that in my recap, that I do think that they would consider him if everything else checks out, the interviews with him go well and all that stuff. So anyway, back to the draft. We traded back to 12, took Devin Witherspoon.
Yeah.
So what was the debate there? It was Devin Witherspoon or Van Ness from
Van
Iowa,
Ness,
who you liked.
Which we actually wondered if he would fall, if Van Ness would be there at 18. But
I have no idea what his range is. I feel like it's anywhere
from
like
it's right there.
9
I
to 20.
I think it's from
maybe not 20, but
I think it's right there. I think it's from 10
like
to
the Bears.
10 to 18. I think 10 to 18.
He's from the Chicago area. The Bears probably maybe be interested.
Maybe, maybe 9. But yeah, I don't think he gets beyond 18. I don't think he gets beyond 15, frankly. I've looked at this.
18, 9 to 15.
But is Patriots are at 15, right?
Packers.
Right? Patriots 14. 14? Mm-hmm. I don't know if that young man is going to get beyond William Belichick. Because if he... Van Ness has every single possible trait you can have as a defensive lineman. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Yeah. I just don't. If he fell to 18, that would be a hell of a steal. But he did not in our draft. He did not fall.
I think I kind of like the way we did
but
it.
But I don't mind taking Witherspoon because he's ready to go.
Yeah. And we took an edge in scenario one with the first pick. So I like going corner here. And then who we come back for at 18? We got your guy, Nolan Smith. So explain why how Nolan would fit in this defense. Because I feel like I had some Lions fans wondering like how he fits in. Is he redundant to any player on the roster? Like how do you see him kind of working with this defense? Yeah.
If he would be redundant to anyone, it would be Houston and whatever That's we what think heard, Houston, yeah. Houston whatever we think Houston will become. But it's also like you can't turn down guys like that because you think James Houston will become what we saw over six games, right? Like you hope that he becomes that. And if you have a chance to take a guy like Nolan Smith, I think Dane has him up to like 10 or 11, by the way, right?
11.
Like he's 11. You're adding immediate value and long-term value. And most important, which is what you don't really have with Houston right now, versatile value. Nolan Smith at Georgia, and everybody saw his testing numbers. They were through the roof, right? He ran the crazy 40 and the jumped out of the building. He's not the biggest guy in the world. Right, he has got some length, but he's not powerful strength. You know, he's a smaller guy, so he'd have to be your open whatever. Like Hutchinson would have to play the heavy side, which they don't love for him.
Yeah,
but Nolan Smith, nobody at Georgia over those last 2 years did more and wore more hats and did more dirty work and did stuff to make sure other guys were able to make plays than Nolan Smith. Like they would not have won two national titles without him. They would not have gone undefeated without him. They may have imploded without him. And some, I mean, everything I've heard about Nolan Smith behind the scenes, like who he is as a player and what he was at Georgia is like, he's like a coach's dream. Every teammate loved him. He was a five-star recruit. Like that's rare, rare stuff. That's like Aiden. That's what Aiden was. Right. So I just think you're adding another guy and how he fits. I don't know. You figure it out. Like that's really, I think, the end of the day thing. There's going to be some limitations to it, but I think that he's the type of guy that you'd be adding so much value in so many other areas that you would just make it work. You'd figure it out because he would do an awful lot for you, but definitely a different type of edge. And Murphy was another guy that we talked about there because I think he was still on the board. Mm-hmm. And maybe that would be what they would do because it would free up Aiden to be, you know, because Murphy's a big, big physical run you over. He's more like Wilson. So, and if that allows Aiden to be on the the open end, which maybe that's what they do. And that could be the ultimate plan. I would love that too, but I wouldn't discount a guy like Nolan Smith either, because I just think that Hutchinson's versatility still allows you to do so many things.
Right. I do like the back and forth of these sort of exercises where we can explain the thought process and what went into it and other players that were considered. Moving on to 48, we took Darnell Washington, which was kind of tough because PFF is just super low on him. He's like 71st on their board. They can't stand the dude, but I love him. I think he's perfect tight end in this offense. He might be
close to late first, early second,
but at 48, the reason we did 48 is because we kind of split the difference. Like Dane had him, I think 32nd on his latest big board. PFF has him at 71. 48 feels like, you know, good middle ground there.
Yeah.
So like, all right, we'll do it here, but we don't know what's going to happen on draft day. 55, Bergeron, a guy we've talked about a lot.
Yeah, I love him.
Has the guard tackle flexibility. Oh, yeah, at 65, we got the extra pick. And how do you say his last? Devin Achane?
I think it's Achane, A&M running back. But I'm not positive because I just read these guys' names.
I know, yeah. We'll go Devin Achane. We're not known for
I'm a reader. I try. Yeah, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Devin Achane, Texas A&M running back, who's the fastest back in the class.
Oh, like, yeah, he is fun to watch.
If you're looking for a speed back that can complement Swift and
David Montgomery
for 2023, like that's
man
probably your guy. So getting him with the extra pick that we got, 65, really like that idea. We were kind of waiting on defensive tackle. I think we considered maybe taking Benton a little earlier, but didn't make it work.
And that's one that I think that more after I thought about it when we were done, I would probably be more in line with you where you were. Because I think you liked him more than I did when we were doing the exercise. I randomly was watching him later last night and I was like, you know what? I think you're probably right. Like he's probably a guy that we could have taken there. Go ahead. Sorry, keep going.
So. No, yeah, that's a good point. So we kind of waited on Gervin Dexter, the Florida defensive tackle. Mm-hmm. And I think Dane has him in the 50s in his top 100.
Right.
So I don't know if he'll make it to 81, but
I doubt it.
If he does, it's if he is there, it's because maybe guys aren't high on the lack of production, and he has some work to do, plays inconsistency, a little high sometimes, and, inconsistent tape, all that stuff. So I would love the idea of, if he's sitting there at 81 and you haven't taken a defensive tackle yet, like, that's, get that dude in here, coach him up. And, you know, I think Deontay wrote his sort of blurb in the top 100 maybe, and said he might be the second most talented defensive tackle in this class behind Jalen Carter. So, I mean, I love the idea of getting him at 81. And then we still have 104 in the fourth, which you picked up in this trade, and we could probably get a linebacker. We were only doing three rounds for this exercise, so that's a fourth round pick. We didn't get to it, but man, you still got 104, 152, and the two sixth rounders, 183 and 194. So that's
pretty good.
Pretty good draft. Pretty good haul, right? Yeah. I mean, you can make it work. The biggest question is there a logical partner for you to trade down from
Sixth? Yeah.
And I don't honestly, looking at this today, I don't think there will be, but you never know.
Yeah, I don't either. You never know. I mean, I've said that before, that I think it's impossible, and then it's very possible on draft. You know, then it comes up, and you're like, oh, yeah, they could absolutely do it right now if they wanted to, and then they don't, or whatever, for whatever reason. But the one that I liked the best is the next one here, and then these are the last two, and they're like kind of like the same. But we did the choose-your-own-adventure because I wanted to test the price of what it would cost to go get Will Anderson. Like, if we think that the quarterbacks are going to go one and two, and he's at three, and Arizona is in the situation they're in, which is they need draft picks. They just need picks. Anderson is an elite player, maybe the most elite player in this draft. I think he's number one. Dane has him number one, and I do not disagree. Like, I think he's the best football player in this draft class. In the same way that I think you could make the argument Aiden was the best one in last year's, right? They're very similar in what they can bring to the table. They're different players, but whatever. The price to go up and get him was not that high, and if that is a thing that is on the table, that is what I would do. That is what I would do, because if Colton, if you put Aiden Hutchinson with Will Anderson, you have taken the two most, I don't want to count, say dominant, because Sauce Gardner was involved as well in that conversation, but like the two most productive, dominant front level defenders in college football over the last 2 years, and now you're, they're your core of your defense.
Yeah.
Like, that's nuts. I don't know what to even say about that. Yeah. You'd be done on defense after that.
Like, absolutely. Right. There's nothing else to do, really. But we still gave him a few more. Honestly,
we actually did.
Yeah. I don't hate it.
But it's like, they'd be perfect together. I think they complement each other in ways that we wouldn't even quite be able to see yet.
Yeah. Man, like, the idea of Hutchinson and Will Anderson is just like, Aaron Glenn's probably like, go get me that dude, like, right now.
Yeah, I mean, if it's possible, that's what I would do.
And Holmes went to Alabama's pro day, I think, last week. And he told us, you know, I don't get to make it out too many pro days, so I'm glad I was able to go to that one. And that's one where, obviously, you have more than one big-name prospect. So that was kind of a way to kind of see multiple guys that he might like in the draft. But at the same time, man, they're going to like Will Anderson a lot.
Oh,
like,
I'm sure a lot of these coaches. How can you not?
Yeah. And if you have a chance to go get him, I think the only question here is, like, is that going to be enough? And honestly, as we were doing it,
I probably wasn't. Yeah.
I don't think so. And here's the math on that. So we gave up 6 and 48, which is, per the Rich Hill chart, 567 points of value. And we gave that up for number 3, which is only 514 points of value. So you're talking about, you know, 50 points there, but that's probably the equivalent of, like, what's 50 points, like a third round maybe. So, the Cardinals, if this were to work, would have to give us a third to have equal value along with number 3. So that's sort of what we're talking about.
You'd have
about
to overpay.
But the reason why we were okay with doing this is because there's going to be a bidding war if they're going to trade number 3. Like, they're not, I don't think even 6 and 48 gets it done. Like, you might have to throw in more just to sweeten it and overpay by like 100 plus points just to get a deal done. We only overpaid by like 50 points. So, looking at it today, it's probably light. If they do want to sacrifice maybe like a future third or like a 2024 pick in addition to these two, maybe that gets it done. Like, you take the third round that you got from Minnesota and the Hawkinson deal for next year.
Right.
Maybe you throw that in there too, along with 6 and 48. So, you basically, actually, because, you know,
I'd do it.
55, which is in the Hawkinson deal. So the Hakuta deal might set up for them to get
right. Like, look, if they're not going to go and we think that they're not going to go and get Williams or Drake May or whatever, they're not doing that next year. They're not going to take everything that they've gathered and just throw it at a quarterback. If you're not doing that, you got two options. You can sit there and let those picks make more picks, or you can like pool them all in and go get another guy that's like not Caleb Williams or Drake May, but the defensive version of that. Yeah. You could do that too if you wanted to, and it's going to be a lot cheaper. It's going to be a lot cheaper. I don't know what it would cost, probably more than what we gave them, but I don't think it's impossible. And you'd probably have a bidding war, right? Because there's probably going to be people that want to come up there and get Richardson, all this. Like, there's going to be a lot going on there, and there's going to be a line where you're out. But I promise you that if the Cardinals are fielding calls for number three, the Lions are going to call them because, like, there's no, how can you not? Like, how can you not?
Just to see what it's
right. Yeah.
Take,
like, the other right? one You're we did there was, diligence. Yeah. The other one we did there quickly was drafting Richardson, which is, we did the crazy one where we're like, okay, we gave you the dream scenario. Now let's shock your system, which again, I don't know. I don't think neither of us think that's going to happen. Neither of us think that's likely to happen, but neither of us would rule it out. And I think that again, If the price becomes something that's manageable and you think you can do this and you love this guy, that's what you're doing. That's what you're doing. Yeah. And I think that that's what this illustrates.
I don't think it's – the closer we get to the draft, the less likely it is that I think Brad Holmes will keep all of his picks. Like,
yeah, I think that's the best takeaway.
You know, in the first three rounds. Like, I don't think he just acquired, you know, this extra capital just to – stay
sit on him.
Because we saw him do it last year. He traded up multiple picks to go get Jameson. Like, he has the resources to do the same thing if he wants to, whether it's for Anderson.
He traded up in the first year, too.
He did. That's right. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, man. Like, he's got a history. Like, we know it. Now he's got
the capital
to
do it
again.
Yeah.
So.
He loves to do it. Sometimes they've had to pull him back in the trade room. Agnew's had to, like, tell him to sit down and, like, calm down. And he's like, don't do this. Like, you know what I mean?
He wanted
Levi
to train the
was the one
Levi,
that
right?
he wanted to go get. Not in the first, but I think like up in the second, maybe even up more than they went or whatever. Okay. Like, yeah. And it was, they were like, Jesus, man, like take it easy. So
he gets aggressive
if he loves
he falls
the guy,
in love with guys, like he loves these dudes. Like he has his guy sitting there. He's paranoid that someone's going to grab him.
Right.
He's not going to be afraid to make a move. And like, if you honestly, like with the way the roster is right now, it's really healthy. They don't have a ton of glaring needs.
You like, can take a chance. Yeah,
you can take a chance. Like, you don't have to trade back and get like 10 more picks. Like, I don't know. Some of those guys might even make the team. Like, you're going to have to cut depth elsewhere. Yeah. So, I mean, at this point, it could be, you know, quality over quantity. And if that's the case, go get one of the best players in the draft. Now, the other situation is, of course, quarterback and Anthony Richardson. And seems like that was the least liked scenario
course.
Of all
no
these.
No one likes that one.
No one likes that one, but I still understand it. If you can get a guy to be the future of your franchise, he can be the backup to Goff this year and maybe next year even. Ben Johnson will work for him for at least a year. Mm-hmm. Like, they're a great place for him. And
he
steps
they
in,
still
he's
are.
Ready to play.
Yep.
How old is he? Like 20, 21? Like
20.
He's so young. He's 20 years old. Like, come on.
He is Bryce's age, more or less. Yeah. I think they're about the same age on the months. Yep.
So if you let that dude sit and marinate in this offense, like, I know we talked about
great.
A lot, but the next three picks, even we kind of gave them help with some safer picks with like
we just went Miles all defense,
Murphy,
right,
Benton, and Dorian Williams,
and it still ends up being a good haul. Like that's the point, right? Like you're not wasting Nothing is wasted. I think is the ultimate. Like people talk, why are you wasting a pick on Bijan? You're not wasting a pick on Bijan Robinson.
How is the most elite running back to come out of the draft in years a wasted pick? Like
it's not a wasted pick. So I think that's what I would say. It's time. You know, they've collected and done their due diligence and. All this, I think that on draft weekend is when it's time to splurge a little bit. Like, I think that they could take some swings. I wouldn't be shocked to do exactly what you said. I don't think they're going to keep all their picks. I wouldn't be shocked to see them take some swings and go get it because I think they're in position to do it finally. So, but I think that's it for this week. You got anything else, Colton, before we get out of here?
No, again, we've said it so many times, but just the options they have is just
it's
kind of
pretty good. Pretty staggering, actually.
I did a big board with 35 names, and there were still people in the comments saying, why didn't you say this name?
This guy.
I'm just like, you're not wrong.
I know.
But it's crazy.
It is crazy, but we'll have fun over the next month here breaking it all down as we get into crunch time with it and all the focus heads to the draft. Fun time of year, of course, as always. But in any event, I believe Friday, today and Friday are the last days of our dollar sale, so go ahead and check that out.
If please sign up for that. That's a great deal.
Sign up for that.
And it doesn't happen often.
So. Very true in any event. But that'll do it for this week. Thanks so much for listening. For Colton, I'm Nick. Thanks again, and take care.